Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womack and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Today we kick off a podcast series highlighting some of the things you can do and see around Front Royal, Virginia. We begin by diving into the rich history of the Civil War Sites Program brought to you by Civil War Trails. Since 1994, Civil War Trails has been weaving together the stories of generals, soldiers, citizens, and the enslaved across a network spanning six states. From the retreat of Robert E. Lee to the surrender at Appomattox, these trails offer a unique opportunity to step into the past. Today, we're privileged to have Drew Gruber, Executive Director of Civil War Trails. He's here with us to explore the program's origins, its significance, and we'll zero in on the 12 Civil War sites nestled in Front Royal, Virginia, and Warren County. Join us as we uncover the narratives that define these hallowed grounds and discover the treasures awaiting those who venture along the Civil War trails. Welcome to the show, Drew. It's great to have you on today.
Dawn, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, this is so amazing. And thank you for being my first guinea pig on the StreamYard. This new technology that I am learning to conquer with some of our remote guests that we're going to have just like you. So, laughers, again, like I told you in the episodes previously, you can watch me get my act together on this YouTube channel with this podcast. So, thanks again, Drew.
Well, I mean, you know, for your first foray into tech, you picked a history guy, so we'll see how this goes.
I know, right? I'm brave, so they say. I have some questions for you. I would love to start with, what is the genesis of this program? How did this come to be? How did you get into it? And how has it evolved over the years?
There are lots of origin stories for Civil War Trails. Many of them have holes in the plots, but the one that seems to be consistent is that there was a party on a porch in Richmond, Virginia in 1993 or 1994, and a bunch of people got together and apparently fueled by some adult beverages, they were sort of saying, man, wouldn't it be cool if we figured out a way that people could drive from Richmond and Petersburg to Appomattox to, you know, follow the retreat of Robert E. Lee from these two cities to, you know, where the nation will come back together at Appomattox. And that was in 1993, 1994. And they came up with a system of like 12 billboard style signs that all had a solar panel, and you would drive up to the billboard and tune in on your AM radio to hear somebody tell you what happened there. And that's the genesis of the program. And as I sit before you today, we have just tapped over 1,500 sites across six states. And we are often, as I like to say, the world's largest open air museum.
Oh, that's a great way to put that. And so you have an army of staff to help take care of all of this?
Oh, yeah. So an army. So me and Chris.
Yeah.
Are the full-time staff for all six states.
Oh,
we have. Yeah, there's just two of us. There's two of us for 200,000 square miles of program. So I am not often on video chats with folks or doing recordings when I'm not in the car and overalls fixing and repairing the signs and talking to guests on the phone and helping writers figure out how to get to these sites. We do have a couple part-timers, and we have 26 bosses who sit on our board who help direct the organization. So we don't have an army of staff. We often say, we are small but mighty.
Yes, I would say so. You see the Civil War site or trail sites signs everywhere you go. You can't miss them.
Yeah, one person, I don't know if they were joking or not, said that I had littered the state with signs.
Really? They're very nice looking and have wonderful information. I disagree.
I would too. But I mean, because I'm in the truck all the time, and Chris and I have some super hard opinions on barbecue and local beer. I mean, when we're out fixing and repairing the signs, we oftentimes can speak with authority when visitors call us and they're like, hey, you know, I'm going to Front Royal. Where should I eat? Where should I drink? We know.
I know. Yes, you do know. You do.
And we know what
and
not to know.
That's exactly right. Wait, I'm assuming. I shouldn't assume. What do you mean by that?
Well, there are a lot of times visitors will contact us and they'll be like, hey, so I'm going to East Tennessee and we were thinking about staying here, here, and here and eating here, here, and here. And we'd be like, are you sure? Because we can make some other recommendations based on what your travel party is. So we know a lot and we know what not to know too.
I love it. Yeah, you've spent how many years doing this now?
8 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I've been keeping log. I think I'm up to somewhere north of 500,000 miles I've driven since I started the job in 2015.
How many days of the year are you on the road?
Last year we were over 100 nights in hotels.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I say, we have some opinions on where to stay and where not to stay and where to eat and where not to eat.
Where not to eat. And hopefully you and Chris travel well and are good buddies and it's doesn't get any, you know, challenging.
We podcast a lot. We listen to a ton of podcasts. People are always like, well, what do you guys talk about? We're like, not too much.
Oh, and really? What kind of podcast?
I was going to say, when you're driving from here to Nashville, there's only so many things to keep you chatting for 15 hours. So we listen to a lot of podcasts, a lot of comedy. We listen to a lot of like the stuff you should knows and the like informative podcasts, you know, about like the evolution of sandwiches or flamingos, anything not history related.
I bet, because you have you have enough of that going on.
You know it.
Hey, laughers. Tisha here. You know what goes great with this podcast? Free Popsters Gourmet Popcorn. We're so excited to sponsor this podcast, highlighting some of the most wonderful people in the Shenandoah Valley. To show our love for you laughers, we're giving you 15% off today at prepopsters.com. That's PrePopsterous.com. Use promo code LAUGH15.
I want to ask you how the Civil War Trails sets itself apart from other historical initiatives and what makes it particularly engaging for visitors.
Oh, well, so first off, all of your listeners can get involved and there's a couple ways that we can sort of bring them into the fold, be part of the family. But every single Civil War Trails site, of which there are 1500 and we're growing, we have about 200 projects on the deck right now. Every single Civil War Trails site is grown at the grassroots. So it is the nerds in the community or the community leaders, the stakeholders, the descendants who propose these stories to be added to the program, which is really humbling when you hear and read some of these stories. You're just kind of like, wow, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, these people are trusting you with their story. So the first thing that makes our program unique is that we're not a central clearinghouse of history. I don't write the signs. I vet the signs. I know there's power in a good story well told.
But
the signs are created and brought to us by the communities who own their stories, right? They've been guardians of these stories for years. So that's the first thing that really makes our program unique, is that when you arrive at a Civil War Trails site, you're not only standing in the footsteps of a battle or a specific individual, but that sign is the culmination of years of research and stewardship from the community that made that sign possible. The second thing, and this is where I think we can bring your listeners in, that makes our program unique is that it's a living, breathing program. So every single Civil War Trails site around the nation has a sponsor. And that sponsor allows me to ship map guides. It allows me to fix the directional signs. It puts gas in the truck, overalls on our bodies when we're out working, tools in our hands. But it also allows me to edit and update the signs. So if one of your listeners goes out and visits a site in, you know, Western Maryland or Front Royal, Virginia, and they find a sign and they're kind of like, it wasn't too clear why I was standing here. Tell us, because we can fix the sign or update it. We have a lot of people who will be traveling following, you know, the regiment their ancestor was in. And they'll be like, well, here's a photo of my ancestor and a diary. And, you know, he was at this battle of Falling Waters, West Virginia. And I'll be like, yeah, I'd really like to put that picture on the sign. And all of a sudden they become part of the Civil War Trails family.
Oh,
too.
That's so neat.
Isn't it cool? Yeah, it is very much a living, breathing program. And we love to hear from guests and travelers all the time. It is the best part of my job.
Yeah, you mentioning that reminds me, when I was on your website, there is a picture, I think it's on your homepage even, the About Us page, I should say, about that. There is a descendant that was helping put a sign up and all of that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. And because these communities help write their signs, when those community leaders travel and they see a Civil War Trails sign, because of course they're everywhere, we've littered the place with them. you know, they may want to be inclined to stop and hear a story that they might not otherwise find approachable, because they want to know how that community wrote their Civil War story.
Now, see, that's a great segue into the next question, which is, how do you select and curate the sites that are featured on the Civil War Trail?
Great question. And I love the word curate. I feel like the word curate is everywhere these days. I hear that on the radio, curated by. So the application process really begins with those community leaders, right? So they're going to propose to us and be like, oh, well, you know, on this day, this skirmish took place. And I'm going to be like, oh, okay, well, you know, that sounds pretty significant. We could probably get some people out there. And then really the sort of the curatorial process begins by then asking them, like, do we have permission to put the sign in the ground? Like, do you know where it's going to go? And usually the only time we ever, usually when we reject applications to the program, it's because there's no site that's willing to host the sign where the event took place. So that's a hallmark of our program. When you arrive at a Civil War Trail site, you're standing where the event took place, or you're within clear field of vision of where it took place. Because we don't want the signs to be a data dump. We don't want you to show up to a sign and it says, on May 23rd, 1862, the 3rd Brigade traveled past here. We don't want that. Like, we want them to be like charging towards you, you know, entrenched here. You know, we want something with some pop, some punch to it. So the process of approving the applications and curating the applications begins right then and there. Like, are you standing where the event took place? And then from there, you know, we're going to take that locally sourced story and we're going to put it against a blind review committee. It might involve a historian who's written about the topic, but by and large, it will involve people who have like written into our website. And they're like, hey, I'm kind of interested in this thing. Occasionally it'll be one of my neighbors, who are much younger and they're kind of more interested in animals than they are about the Civil War. and they're really good because sometimes we're too close to these stories and they'll be like, well, you talked about General Humperdinck. Was he on Team Blue or Team Gray? And they have a way of cutting through all this sort of morass. And then, of course, you know, once the sign's installed, if it's approved, then we have the ability to update it and change it. So there's no one set period of time in which we're sort of jurying the stories, because they're going to continue to live and breathe.
I see. I was thinking, as you were answering that question, what if we call our listeners laughers. What if a laugher wanted to, oh, I want to get a site put up here because of my ancestor. How would they get the permission? How does someone go about doing that legwork in order to be eligible to get on the Civil War Trails Network? Go to the city office? How does that work?
Well, laughers, if you want to apply to be on the Civil War Trails program, I will gladly take your check. No, you know, the process really begins with that idea, because sometimes people will write us and they'll be like, hey, like my ancestor was in this regiment. They fought in the Battle of Corrick's Ford. How can I help? And if they don't know how to get site permissions, but they have an idea, they've secured some funding, because of course, you know, I like to get paid, so this stuff costs money. I should just throw that out there. Okay. We bring in a municipal tourism office halfway through the process. And that municipal tourism office usually tells us, like, yeah, there's really good reason for us to get people to that corner of the county, or, you know, this corner of the county doesn't really have a lot of parking options. So if the laughers are stuck on their application and they don't know how to apply to get permission to put in a Civil War Trail sign, I can reach out to a tourism office who I probably work with already and say, hey, do you happen to know who owns this piece of property? And especially if it's a business or a county park, it's a shoo-in. But we can help you with the application. That's part of what we're here for.
So you can help with getting the permissions to put up the site.
And that is always the hardest part. Dawn, it is not the money. It's usually the site permissions that holds
for
us
real?
Up. We have some applications that have lingered for the whole time I've been here, because people are still waiting to sign on the dotted line to give permission to put a sign in the ground.
Is that usually a private property situation, I would imagine? Or what's the holdback for some people?
Some are private, some are public. You know, if you've not heard, the real estate market's crazy. So there's a lot of things that are being sold and moved and changed. So, you know, sometimes we'll start working on a project and a year will go by and someone will have sold it. you know, occasionally someone passes away. And those are the things that tend to hold us up. But yeah, we don't have a lack of work. As I mentioned before, we have over 200 projects on deck right now. So don't let anybody tell you the Civil War is not popular, because boy, howdy, do we need more staff.
Yes, I would say so. How do you manage this? Because I think you started in one state, was the state of Virginia, where this whole program started, and then it moved and expanded to five states. And you were there at the very beginning, right?
No, I wasn't. I'd be way more gray than I am
right.
now.
Oh, right, 93, 94. That's yeah. when my son was born. That was a few years ago. Sorry about that.
I won't say how old I was in 93, 94, but let's just say I wasn't thinking about gainful employment. The program began in Virginia with those 12 sites. That sort of was that Genesis party that everybody talks about. And then, today Virginia has about 560 Civil War Trail sites and more applications coming in too. How we do it, I think, was your question. I would say that it's a fine line between caffeinated and alcoholic beverages, depending on the time of day.
Okay. So it sounds like you put in a lot of hours per week to get this done.
Yes.
Yes. But it also seems like you're very passionate about it. So it doesn't seem,
It's hard not to be. I think when you're listeners, the laughers are probably thinking, oh, Civil War, whew. Civil War has a branding problem, right? Everybody has a conception as to what the Civil War is. But the stories that we're getting are coming from all walks of life and all types of people. Who have maybe sometimes even on the face, you wouldn't necessarily look at this person and say, they definitely have a Civil War story. We recently engaged with the Islamic League of Western Maryland about a really cool story. And it just goes to show you, like, every day I wake up and I look at my groaning email box and I know less and less about the Civil War, and more people want to go to the sites and more people want to add sites to the program. And I think that speaks to just how evocative this period of time is. Yeah, the Civil War has a branding problem because it's constantly in the news, but it's constantly in the news because it's on everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. And what else do we have that's 160 years old that's constantly on other people's minds? I can't answer that question.
That's true. It's a significant time in history, no doubt. And we're the product of it living today. And it's good to go back in history, I think, because it teaches us a lot of lessons about what went right and what went wrong. So we can change trajectory and create a better future if we understand our past. And
we can definitely learn from the past. There are benchmarks of things like, we definitely don't want to do that one again, right? Mm-mm. But then you know, our audience now is younger than it's ever been. And I think that's because as people sort of grapple with what stress looks like for them and what drama looks like for them and what keeps them up at night is all relative to everyone. But I think in the power of a good story well told is that sort of empathy, right? And sometimes when you read these signs, and there are a few in Front Royal, they have these little moments of humanity, and you're kind of like, man, would I have done that day? And you start thinking about these individuals as not people of the past, but maybe not being too totally different from you.
Oh, that's very poignant. Very deep. It's true. You have to be in someone's shoes and think about that. Would I respond the same way? And you may or may not. And you may surprise yourself. Yeah. And what you would do.
Watching average people rise to occasions in the Civil War, I think, could both be inspiring. I think would also sometimes reinforce sometimes we as individuals today sort of feel conflicted on things or act on some things and not others. And again, it goes back to this idea of people are people regardless of the century.
We all share in our humanity. Is
well said.
That's paramount, and across cultural too. Even we can't speak the same language, we still share in our humanity. So this is good work you guys are doing right here. You have on your website a lot of helpful resources for people to kind of plan and explore the Civil War sites, including the map guides and the interactive map that's available to them on your website. Can you talk about that a little bit further so that the laughers know what they can get in terms of resources from you all and to check out all these different sites in six states? Specifically yeah, here in the Shenandoah Valley, but they can go beyond that, you know?
Yeah, a great question, Dawn. So for you laughers out there, you might be like, oh, yeah, so okay, so there's 1,500 sites and there's a sign. And when you stand there, sort of like paints a picture of what happened here. And that's great. And Drew keeps talking about barbecue and beer, but here's what you need to know. My whole job is to get you to go to these places, which is one reason I'm on the podcast today, right? So if you are planning a trip to the Shenandoah Valley and, you know, you have a father, a son, an uncle, a traditional Civil War buff with you, or somebody who likes history that, you know, might enjoy these stories, you can request a map from our website and we'll mail it to you. Not only are we going to mail it to you, but I'm going to say to you, like, hey, when you get the map, if you have questions about where to eat and where to stay and, you know, what to see and do, I've been there. So ask away. And I love that. I love chatting with a family, whether it be by way of email or phone call. And they're kind of like, here's where we're going. Here's how much time we have. And, you know, my daughter really likes horses. You know, my husband really likes local beer. And here are the things that I find interesting. And I could be like, okay, you know, there's this great museum for kids here. And then here's an equestrian center. And here's a great place for beer. So when you log on to our website, you're going to find out a little bit about the Trails program as a whole. The printed maps that we can mail to you are also there as a PDF in case you don't want print, but a lot of people like print lately. Mm-hmm. And then we have the interactive website too, which is mobile friendly. So if you're lost somewhere and you're like, where's this dang Civil War Trail site? You can just pull it up on your phone and it'll take you right over there. So we have all sorts of resources that are free to you thanks to our sponsors that will help plan your trip from home, help you navigate while you're in market, as the tourism people say. And then of course there's my knowledge, or rather opinions about where to stay and go. And I have Chris's knowledge as well. So we're happy to share that with any of the laughers out there who are planning a trip.
Yeah, I found it really fascinating. I was playing around with the interactive map and I loved how they're marked. The Civil War sites are marked with red stars where you have the signs that people can see. Once you click on the interactive map, you can choose the different trails and the trail itself will light up and connect the stars. Which is pretty cool.
You know which you know which theme you're following. And then in some places, especially the Shenandoah Valley, this is very true in Warren County. You have a couple Civil War themes that sort of, you know, crisscross each other as you travel. Mm-hmm. So for purists who are like, I'm only gonna follow the Gettysburg campaign, you know, on the interactive map, as you said, Dawn, you can click and know that you're on the right track.
Yes, I like that a lot. And there are the 12 sites in Front Royal and Warren County that people can check out as just one part of the Shenandoah Valley. There's tons of Civil War sites in the Shenandoah Valley itself, but we're going to focus on those. Could you highlight some of the lesser known stories and sites within Front Royal and Warren County that our laughers might find very intriguing?
Right off the top of my head, I think there are sort of like three that jump out at me from Front Royal and Warren County. And as you said, there are 12 Civil War Trail sites to visit. Most of them follow one specific event, which is the Battle of Front Royal that happens in May of 1862. But within the Battle of Front Royal, there's a couple interesting ones. There's an 18-year-old female spy who shows up on the scene. And we talk about her story a little bit, which is kind of exciting. We have a United States soldier who is cited for meritorious action and given the Medal of Honor during the Battle of Front Royal. And then for those of you laughers on the line, you probably recognize the word Gettysburg. Most people tend to. And even in Warren County, there is a site associated with Gettysburg. So of the 12, those are really the big three that sort of like jump out at me as the ones that are kind of like the ones that are most evocative to me. And the ones that I tell visitors about the most in Front Royal too.
Yeah, I've passed by some of them because the upcoming episodes are a series on Front Royal. And laughers, you're going to hear from a brewery and a barbecue place that Drew likes in the coming weeks. And next, you will meet the tourism director, next week from Front Royal, which is a great place for laughers to pick up maps and guides to find the way around to these Civil War sites. I think there's even a driving tour, if I remember right.
There is. Yep. You can follow them turn by turn. Although the ones downtown, you could walk too, if you really wanted to. So you can follow the Battle of Front Royal on foot. It'd take you a good portion of the day to do it. But it would be a nice day, a day well spent. And certainly you can drive these sites turn by turn as well.
Now is there an audio component to any of the sites at all?
There is not an audio component, but we're trying to scheme up some ways that you can find out more about, like the spy I talked about, or the man who received the Medal of Honor. So we're thinking about ways. We've added some audio to some of our signs, but not in Warren and Front Royal yet. Maybe we can convince Lizzie to do that.
Lizzie, I hope you're listening. Yeah, I think that would be a next great evolution of the Civil War sites program, as if there was some audio component. Do you know if the driving tour has an audio component?
You know, that would be a question for Lizzie. I suspect that there may have been one in years past. But, you know, it's interesting you say this, Dawn. One of the things that I have found so fascinating in the last couple months specifically is that as our audience gets younger, the vast majority of them love paper brochures. So we just released a brand new brochure for the Commonwealth of Virginia, all of its Civil War trail sites on one paper brochure. And we printed it on April 2nd or 3rd. And I know we're talking at the end of April today. And we've already shipped 30,000 of them to an average audience of under 40 years old. And I suspect that's because a lot of people... despite loving podcasts, which I do, and certainly your laughers do, I suspect there's a lot of people who kind of have like a little bit of a digital fatigue, and maybe they like to leave their phone in the car when they vacation. But man, we're just on a totally different topic now. You know how history people are with technology. Right. We're usually poo poo it anyhow. So.
Comedians have problems too, but it's okay. We're surviving. What role do you think the local communities play in shaping and maintaining the Civil War trails experience?
Oh man, they're instrumental. For Chris and I, who travel all over the country doing these, it is frequent that we'll get out of the car to fix a sign and someone will stop and be like, "What are you doing to my sign? Oh, is it your sign? Oh, well," and I have to introduce myself. "Well, here's who we are and here's what we're doing." I'd be like, "Oh, well, I helped write that sign. And where are you guys staying tonight? And you really should eat at this place." And that's where a lot of our firsthand knowledge comes from. So the local communities, not only do they help sort of make these signs happen, as we explained before, but they tend to also be sort of like this ad hoc welcoming committee for visitors.
Oh, that's which great. Is, yeah.
Oh, which is, it's equally as important, but you know, they're the ones who also help advance the stories. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's this woman in downtown who I'm happy to talk to talk a little bit more about as well.
Sure.
And her story, this woman, Belle Boyd's story, just continues to evolve. And you'd think after 160 years, we would know everything there is to know about this woman, but it's the local community and the historians who have lived in and around this woman's legacy for so long that allow us to update the sign. So even if you visited a Civil War Trail site, if you go back in a couple of years, chances are we've updated the sign with some new information. So they're very instrumental in making this program tick and in welcoming all the laughers to these sites too.
So the way it works right now is you can get the map, there's the site, you can go to it, you can see where things happen, and you can read something off of the sign. What would be some of the information they would find on the signs in Front Royal? And those were three significant stories. What are some of the other stories?
Let me think about this. Okay, so oftentimes you hear that the Civil War was a war against, you know, brother against brother or father against father. And one of the interesting things that happens during the Battle of Front Royal is you have these two regiments, so these two military units that are identified as the 1st Maryland Infantry and the 1st Maryland Infantry. And the Battle of Front Royal, the two 1st Maryland Infantry square off against each other.
Interesting.
And what makes this significant is that both of these regiments were raised from men who were born in Maryland, were Maryland residents, but one wore a gray uniform and one wore a blue uniform.
Ah.
So inherent in this battle of Front Royal is this sort of age-old Civil War story of father against father or brother against brother. And I don't know too much about the battle to be able to say that there were guys pointing across the battlefield and be like, hey, you, I recognize you. But certainly, you know, this First Maryland versus First Maryland, as they sort of start skirmishing, you know, earlier in the morning. And by the end of the day, the Union Army is just in full retreat. They're extremely outnumbered. They've tried to burn a bridge. It didn't quite work well. And they're just in the full retreat. But one of the things that I think is often sort of passed by with the story of Front Royal is that you have this idea of just how divided the nation really was, to the point where guys who knew each other joined two different causes under the same unit number. And it's just one of those things that sort of tugs at your heartstrings a little bit, kind of like the, you know, the Medal of Honor story too.
The Medal of Honor story. Should I know that?
So not to give everything away for you laughers.
Eighth grade civics, I might be not remembering.
So, you know, Dawn, we were talking before about sort of putting yourself in the footsteps of these people and drawing sort of that empathy, or wondering like, how would I have done that this day? So as the Maryland regiment from the United States Army starts to retreat through town, they set themselves up on this hill. There's a river behind them. And here comes the oncoming Confederate Army, having been partly led into action by this young woman I keep referring to. And you know, their backs to the river. There's two bridges. One of them's a railroad bridge, and the other one is like a vehicular bridge, like for wagons and everything. And they're on this hill, and the Confederate Army is deploying before them. And it's not looking good for Team Blue, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Union commander finally gives them the opportunity to retreat. Some of the guys try jumping across the railroad trestle bridge. Most everybody tries to go over the vehicular bridge. And just as they do that, the Union Army starts to pile, I think with bales of straw or hay, and tries to light the bridge on fire to prevent the Confederates from chasing them, right?
Right, yeah.
But it had rained for a couple days, so it goes out. This is no good. So there's this guy, Sergeant William Taylor, who, despite being wounded, manages to crawl back onto the bridge or limp back onto the bridge and finally helps burn that bridge so that the Union Army can mostly safely evacuate the field, although they still lose that day. And that is this meritorious moment. His Medal of Honor citation is for that moment when, you know, despite the bullets whizzing towards him and a smoldering bridge and him being wounded, he managed to burn the bridge to help save his comrades in the Union Army. And, you know, prepping for today, I'm not a historian, and I was sort of like, man, what is William Taylor's life really like? And I started reading a little bit about him, and he does it again 2 years later at another battle. Yep, gets another Medal of Honor. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's just the type of question where you got to ask yourself, like, you know, okay, would I have crawled onto that bridge to help save my friends? And, you know, you might be, oh, yeah, I could do that. Would you have done it another time a couple years later at another battle, another meritorious action to help save your comrades? And that reminded me that William was made of different stuff than I am. But still, I mean, it's these stories that kind of make you, like, think, you know? So.
Yeah. And it's also, I think, you don't really know in times like that, with that kind of high stress, life and death high stress, what you're going to do until you're in it, I think. You can think you're going to react one way, but when presented with the reality, you may not. What you think you might do, you might disappoint yourself, or you might surprise yourself and do the valor thing when you think you wouldn't have.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't find much about William's life before 1862 when he burns this bridge and gets his first citation, which led me to believe that he might have just sort of been like, you know, you or I or the other laughers, you're doing your 9 to 5, getting your work done. And in this moment, he's like, oh, here's what I got to do. And I was like, wow, I wonder what that's like. And you stand at the Civil War Trail sign, and obviously there's no bridge there today, but you stand at the Civil War Trail sign and your back's to the river, and you're kind of like, he's in a tight spot. You know, if he didn't do it, someone needed to do it. And then And then you follow his history and you're like, 2 years later at this other action in 1864, he gets another citation for valor. And you know, at that point it's baked in. So
he's like Braveheart.
Yeah. And we see this with this young woman who is now referred to as a spy, where in reality it's this May 1862 battle where she sort of first gains her fame. And that sort of gets the ball rolling as to what's possible for her. So
that's the 18-year-old spy you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Is that Belle Boyd that I saw the name of around
town? It is.
Okay.
It is. Yes, Belle Boyd has a brand all of her own.
She does. She does. And they have a walking trail too that you can take. I did do some of that. So you can cross where she lived and other historical sites downtown. It's pretty neat. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. So for your laughers out there, I'm not going to give you the whole Belle Boyd story, but what you need to know is this 18-year-old woman is imprisoned twice during the Civil War. She's reported over 24 times by the United States Army as being problematic. And she's arrested at least 6 times too. So if you think the Civil War doesn't have anything to do with the ladies, you got to visit Front Royal, because Belle Boyd was just lighting it up.
She was feisty.
Yes, she was. I mean, she even went on to write a book in 1865 about herself and her exploits.
Really?
About everything. I think it's called like Belle Boyd in Camp and Prison or Belle Boyd something, but it's semi-autobiographical. I don't know how much in it is factual, but it is a dang good read. So,
okay. Well, thank you for sharing that resource. I'm going to have to look that up. Yeah. Beyond the historical significance, how does the Civil War trails contribute to local comedies? That's what's on my mind. To local economies and community development.
Yeah, great question. So for the laughers listening, you're probably thinking to yourself, okay, so I'm going to show up and there's going to be this sign, and the sign might be about this woman named Belle Boyd. You know, that seems kind of interesting. And you might, you know, if push came to shove and somebody was like, Drew, what do you do? I'd be like, we are an educational nonprofit. Like, we have these signs out there, right? The purpose is to educate you about what happened there. But, you know, as I've said a couple times, we want to get you to go to places like Front Royal. And while you're there, we want you to enjoy local beer and good barbecue. And you're going to stay overnight, I hope. You might go fishing if you're into that. And every time you visit a place, you know, you're going to pay a meals tax or sales tax or an occupancy tax for your hotel. And all those little things add up for the communities. So although we sort of have this educational product, we are very much part of Front Royal's economic development profile, to use an industry phrase. And that's because when you travel the Civil War Trail sites, you're going to stay and you're going to eat and you're going to shop, I hope. And all those things all those things go right back into the hands of service industry families, you know, your wait staff, the brewers, the people who run the museums. And, you know, just to put a fine point on it too, those things like the meals taxes and the sales taxes and the occupancy taxes, they go into the municipal coffers that help pay teachers and police officers. And it's really cool. And I don't think a lot of people, when they travel, tend to think about the impact, the positive impact that they make into a community. And that's one thing we love to do. So when I sort of talked before about how Civil War Trails works, I said we had 26 bosses. They are all tourism folks, because what they view what we do as economic development, not necessarily education. That's a really good question, Dawn. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I thank you for sharing that, because when you travel and you vacation, you're more focused on, hey, this is where I want to go to have fun. That impact on the community in a financial way, in an economic way, isn't something that comes front of mind. Mm-mm. You're not thinking about that. So I love that you pointed that out. And there's only so much time, too, that you can spend right there at the Civil War site. So you're going to want something to do and see in between as you go. And I can imagine you're going to get hungry and you're going to want lunch, and maybe you get hot and you want a beer. And I see that. That's a really incredible part of the program to highlight right now, I think. And as go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's amazing to me. So being at the program now for 8 years, there are communities I'm starting to see for like the second or third time now.
Okay.
And it's amazing to watch these communities grow around tourism. And it's not just Civil War Trails tourism. I wish I could take credit for all of it. But you know, our visitors like a little bit of everything. They like a little bit of history. They like a little bit of fly fishing. They like a little bit of antiques. And it's really neat. And there's some things that like Chris and I have noticed as we travel, like the country store, mm-hmm. which was a thing of the past, seems to be coming back, which is really exciting.
Great. Yeah.
We're starting to see these old buildings brought back as the country stores and become ad hoc post offices where you can get in, go inside and grab a quick sandwich or, you know, a gallon of milk or some Tylenol if you live nearby.
That's great.
And it's really neat to see, you know, outfitters for paddling, pop up in places where we have signs that you have to paddle to get to. And it's amazing to watch the evolution of these communities. And a lot of them are being driven by these tourism dollars and man, that adds up for those communities too.
Where are people paddling to get to the sites? Are they doing that in Virginia or surrounding state?
So we have two right now that are sort of marketed as Paddle 2 sites, and they're both in Maryland.
Okay.
One is on an island in the middle of the Potomac River at a lighthouse.
Wow.
And it has a pretty baller story about a lady, so I'm not going to give too much more away. And you can sort of get a tidbit of the story from the mainland. There's a water taxi that runs out there for some parts of the year, but we have a lot of people who paddle out to that one. And then one of my favorite sites is for Frederick Douglass's birthplace. And if you know anything about Frederick mm-hmm. Douglass, his whole life revolves around the water. He was born enslaved along the Tuckahoe Creek. He remembers being along the creek with his grandma and his mom. It's the creek that brings him to meet the woman he would end up marrying. It's the water that gives him a route of emancipation. So we have two Civil War trail sites along the Tuckahoe in eastern Maryland where you can paddle between the two of them and really get a perspective of Frederick Douglass's life that I don't think you could get otherwise. And it really is an eye-opening experience as to why he developed into the person he did. So
what I'm really appreciating about what you all are doing about this program is there is a theme of highlighting the non-soldier stories, it seems like. It's the soldier stories are there, but you're also highlighting the people in the community, the people that lived at that time, and the enslaved people and their stories too. Are there any of those stories in Front Royal at the 12 sites and Warren County at the 12 sites?
I don't know if any of the 12 we have in Front Royal or Warren right now specifically highlight a historically marginalized story. So be it, you know, an African-American man who served with the, mm-hmm. With the United States Army or an Underground Railroad story. I don't have that instant recall off the top of my head, but the interesting thing about the Civil War is that our visitors don't view the Civil War as being the 4-year period of time where white guys shot at each other. The Civil War is interpreted by our visitors as being this period of time. And it was an eye opener to me when I had, families reach out to me and they're like, "Hey, we're following the Civil War trails. Where can I go for the Underground Railroad story?" Like, "Whoa, the Underground Railroad, where black people self-emancipated?" And they were like, "Yeah." And I would think to myself, like, is that a Civil War story? And immediately the responses come back and be like, "Yeah, the Civil War started long before people started shooting at each other with folks trying to self-emancipate." And Dawn, like, it begs a question, like, where does the Civil War story end? Because in other places around the country, north and south, when the men went off to war, the women in industrialized areas went into the factories. They assumed these sort of previously male-dominated jobs, especially working in places that are called laboratories, so like arsenals that are making arms and munitions and stuff like that. And then when the guys get home from the war, they're like, "Okay, let me get my job back." There's a lot of women who are like, "No,
no."
And also, I want the right to vote. And that's a Civil War story. Is suffrage part of the Civil War conversation? And I think you will find that it is. So the Civil War, the legacy of the Civil War is it is, as it was during the period, diverse and covers many topics. And it's simply not 1861 to 1865.
That's a good point. And really great discussion to have over a brew and some barbecue. I think that's the beautiful part about this program encouraging that is because you have those moments where you come read the sign, and you've even talked about it yourself, kind of thinking, would I do that? And that can be really sparking some really deep conversation and some introspection and some reflection of that time period and our culture and from where we've come and how we relate to each other now, how do we relate to ourselves now. That's a great reason to, I can see having several conversations and deep conversations. Even my husband, we like to have deep convos all the time. And we would see one of those. I could see us talking about it over two beers at Vibris a Beer. Easy. Yeah. Easy.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Not all of the things we hear from visitors are always very substantive and reflective. Sometimes we hear from visitors who will be like, that was funny.
Like, well, really?
Tell me why you think it was funny. And it allows me to think about how we're telling the story on the sign. But I love what you just said, because I think, as I mentioned before, you know, the Civil War's got a brand behind it. And I think there's a lot of people who show up at these signs and they're kind of like, wow, man, William Taylor really needed to burn that bridge. Could I have done that? Or, man, would I have done what Belle Boyd did that day? You know, and maybe they are substantive. Maybe they make you go, And sometimes they just might make you laugh. Other times they might make you sad.
Mm. Again, sharing in our humanity, right? You know, we're human, whether we were born in 1920 or, you know, now. It's humans are humans. And we have the whole gamut of emotion. I don't think we should be afraid of that. That can teach us things, too. Yeah, anger, the bad emotions are supposedly the negative emotions are supposed to be teaching you too at the same time. So that can foster a lot more conversation. And I imagine in doing what you do, you have had challenges and triumphs that you've encountered in preserving all of these stories and promoting these historical sites. What have been some of your biggest challenges?
Perception, just to be honest with the laughers here. Again, there's a perception of what the Civil War was about, why it went down, and who it's for today. So challenging that perception is hard to do. But luckily, I have 1,500 communities who have all started to challenge that perception together, which is a really sort of amazing thing to think about. Even if you have a community talking about their Confederate ancestors and you have a community talking about the Underground Railroad, they are in one space and one room and one program doing that together, which is amazing. One of the other, you know, challenges to the job is the size of this program. It is massive.
It is. I don't know how you do it.
It is the world's largest open air museum. without people writing into us being like, hey, that sign was looking a little crunchy, or hey, this one was a little confusing, or hey, have you thought about this photograph? It'd make my job way harder. There's some challenges for certain.
Mm-hmm. What about the triumphs? What would you say are some of the biggest events or biggest moments, I should say, over the last 8 years
It's so hard to pick one. And these are the things that charge my battery, right? That just keep me going. I probably should focus on some of the ones that happened just this spring down in Augusta County. So just west of Stanton, we unveiled a new Civil War trail sign that is about Virginians from the Shenandoah Valley who are Mennonite and Quaker and Dunkers who are pacifists. And when the Confederate Army starts to conscript people, they're kind of like, no. Here they go walking into the mountains of West Virginia to get away from Confederate conscriptment, and they run into two Confederate soldiers. And there's more of these pacifists than there are Confederate soldiers. And the Confederate soldiers like, well, you're under arrest. And they were like, well, okay, we can't fight you. You know, so it's just one of these human moments. But last spring, I had a month where I jumped from unveiling to unveiling to unveiling. And the first one I did was with the 135th United States Colored Troops Descendant Group. So in the Civil War, black men who fight with the Union Army are referred to in the period as United States Colored Troops. So that's why I said that. And these descendants are based out of Goldsboro, North Carolina, but came from all around the world to unveil their sign, their Civil War Trail sign, about the moment where their ancestors held up their right hand and on the main street in downtown Goldsboro recited the Oath of Allegiance to the United States. And in that moment went from being people owned by other people to federal employees. And that was a big one for me. I get goosebumps still thinking about that. But every day, Dawn, every day, there's a cool story that comes down the pike that just keeps me going. And I hope that enthusiasm is being heard by the laughers and they want to come check some of these out.
Do you feel like these stories just now that it's growing and expanding, more and more are popping up and coming to you? More okay.
Yeah. I mean, to the tune of over 200 at the moment. Okay. And I also think people are thinking about how they have told Civil War stories in the past. So I did say that we update some of the old signs. And sometimes that means taking all of the battle language out of the text. You know, I joked before, like the 3rd Battalion of the 2nd Regiment maneuvered past here. Like you can pull all that out and put it on a map. And then what you could do is you can take a letter from the 17-year-old drummer boy who was with that battalion, who experienced that day, and put that on the sign. So yeah, not only are we seeing people of all walks of life, all ages and interest levels want to add their story to this program, humbly, it's a weird chair to be in. But at the same time, we see a lot of people who have sort of been the stewards of these traditional stories. Mm-hmm. Think about ways to tell them in a more exciting way that would bring back the dedicated audience who already knows the stories because they're like armchair historians, right? And then also cater to this younger, more diverse audience. And that's through these personal stories that you and I keep harping on.
Yeah. Stories are compelling and enrich our lives, whether they tug at our heartstrings and make us cry or make us laugh. I think it gives us encouragement to know that we still have resilience and we can weather even the hard times and rise above and be better for it. Even when it's awful, you can again still learn from it. Let's not repeat that. What happened? Let's not do that. And it's teaching, which is a great, in learning, is a great segue into my next question, is what resources do or does the Civil War Trails offer for educators and those interested in delving deeper into the Civil War history?
Great question. So for those of you who may be listeners who homeschool, for those of you who may be educators or just ad hoc educators, in other words, parents on the weekend who are advocating for more education, if you're studying a specific battle, a specific campaign, if you're researching your ancestor and you're like, oh, wow, you know, they were in the first Maryland U.S. or Confederate and they fought at the Battle of Front Royal, email me. And I can download our signed PDFs. I can give you more information about each site. We keep a short bibliography that's given to us by the communities as to what resources they use to create those. So we can certainly be helpful. We have educators, K through 12, and even some college professors who write us and they'll be like, hey, we're studying Gettysburg. Can you send us your Gettysburg campaign brochures? And we'll send them up. We've had a few educators ask us for our directional trailblazers. So those signs you see on the highway with the iconic red bugle, they're like, can we get one for our classroom? So at the end of the day, laughers, if you're curious to know more about a specific historic event, just email me and ask. It might be a little while before I get back to you because I drive a lot. But just email and ask if you're looking for a specific information about a specific regiment, specific unit, outside of, you know, just planning a trip to go see them.
And how do they email you? I notice, is it best to go to the website and hit click connect and send a message that way or email you direct? How do you prefer?
Couldn't have said it better myself. Yep, just go to civilwartrails.org, click the connect button, and I will respond to you. And if not me, Chris. And if not Chris, Victoria.
All right. three chances, three people to help you for sure. How is the demographic of the Civil Wars? You said it's gotten younger. It's trending younger.
It has.
And when did that start?
Well, so I am a nerd. And in case you hadn't noticed, and I really enjoy trying to figure out who our audience is, what motivates them to come here. And in 2015, the Civil War sesquicentennial ended. So the period of remembering the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. And of course, through the sesquicentennial, state travel offices did these exit surveys about who you are and why you're coming and what you're doing. And all that information was given to me when I started this job. And I was kind of like, this is great, but what does it mean for today? So every year I've collected data from state travel offices. I've looked at third-party surveys about the aptitude of people in history. And I've tracked all of that like a madman on the wall with color-coded charts and graphs and highlights.
Oh my gosh,
just to see what's happening.
Oh,
yeah. It is, yes, indeed. In addition to that, there are really two other ways that sort of bring me around to not only believing that our average audience now is an aggregate age of 42 years old, down about 12 or 15 years from 2015, when the average audience was closer to 65. And there's a couple other ways besides all these academic surveys. Because those tend to happen sort of in a vacuum, right? You know, exit poll at a welcome center. Well, you had to go in a welcome center. But, you know, when we get an email from somebody into the website that's like, hey, going to the Shenandoah Valley, I'm going to go to this battlefield. Where should I go for beer and barbecue? That speaks about who that average visitor might be. We'll also have visitors who are like, hey, I'm part of a cycling club and we're going to go cycle the Antietam campaign trail. There's 30 stops and I notice it's 97 miles. Could we do it in a day? Well, that tells you a little bit about the visitor, right? Mm-hmm. But then Chris and I, when we're out cruising around working on these signs ourselves, guess who we run into? Predominantly younger people. So don't let anyone tell you that young folks don't like history. Because they do. There is, again, power in a good story well told. There's a lot of younger folks who are traveling to take a digital detox, and they view the Civil War as a chance to fuel their imagination, something we don't get a chance to use very much anymore. And it is also a gateway to authentic experiences. And I hear this from people all the time, that they are looking for something that's authentic. And when I ask people what they mean by that, it's by and large a younger person. And what they mean by that is they would prefer to stay in a local bed and breakfast, even if they have to pay a little bit more, than a chain hotel, because it's different. And they would prefer to drink local beer, and they would prefer to eat local barbecue versus a chain restaurant or, you know, a macro brewery, because you can't get that at home. And that's all part of being authentic. Mm-hmm. So thinking about that and bringing it back to sort of heart center, is I want each Civil War Trails sign to be authentic. It doesn't have to be something you agree with, but it has to hit you in a space where you're kind of like, wow, like, I can see why that person did that, or geez, what I've done that day. So yeah, I believe our average audience is around about 42 years old. We know that they stay about two-ish nights. They tend to spend somewhere between like $1,000 and $1,300 when they travel, and they are really motivated by personal stories. They love personal stories, just like our older audience. Our older audience will already be able to tell you who is in command of the Confederate Army at the Battle of Front Royal. What they won't be able to tell you is where Belle Boyd ran onto the field that day. It's the personal stories that work really well to attract a younger audience, and younger people do love history. So if we're serving them history and we're pairing it with other cool amenities, they will absolutely come.
Yeah, I can see that. I like history too. I'm not an expert. Buff is probably too strong, but I very much enjoy history so much. I think because these are our ancestors. We come from the generation now, from the generations before us. And we can identify, I think, ourselves when we go look at these different stories or study history or read about history or immerse ourselves in a museum, is think, oh my gosh, you know, my ancestor was especially if it's where your family may have been, they may have talked mm-hmm. to this other aunt. Like, this is crazy. We are all connected, even through time.
It's well said, as always. And it reminds me, I gave a tour many, many, many years ago to a young group of school kids in downtown Colonial Williamsburg. And I told this story, and this kid looks at me. He says, "Well, I suppose people have always been people-y." I was like, "You're right."
Yes, that's great. I love the
you're right. People have always been people-y.
People have always been people-y.
And you know, that doesn't make you feel so alone, does it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, is everyone's had good days and bad days and their ups and downs and their tears and their laughs and everything in between. Yeah. And we're in a challenging time right now. I hope we don't have anything that significant come to pass again. But if history proves itself at some point in the future, there'll be some more tough times. I mean, it's part of life. So I love that you guys are doing this. And I'm wondering, too, you in six states, but do you have exciting developments or expansions that we can expect from the Civil War Trails in the future?
Well, as I joked before, my life is fueled by a fine line of caffeine and adult spirituous beverages. So I love bourbon, so I guess it would be natural for me to invade. Ooh, did I say that out loud? I meant it would be natural for me to expand into Kentucky. So my invasion / expansion into Kentucky would be fortuitous for my retirement. You know, we've often considered about growing the Civil War Trails program out of our current footprint. Kentucky, all joking aside, does have great bourbon, but they also do have a lot of really great Civil War stories. And a lot of our sites in Tennessee and West Virginia reference Kentucky. So it would be a lot of fun, to add Kentucky to the Civil War Trails program, but we got our hands full with what we got right now. But we have taken on some work doing, helping communities with their Revolutionary War stories, because of course we're at the precipice of the 250th of America. So we're helping some communities right now with their Revolutionary War stories, but, expanding into Pennsylvania has been a lot besides maintaining the, you know, the 1500 other children that we have out there.
You call your signs your children.
Sometimes.
Okay. And this takes a lot of money. You have a board, you're a nonprofit. If someone wants to donate, as I'm sure that's possible, could you share with the laughers if someone wants to get more involved? Maybe they want to be a sponsor of a site, or maybe they just want to donate some money to help expand your staff eventually or something. What would they do?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
As a nonprofit, I appreciate that. That may be my favorite question you've asked today. So as I mentioned before, every single Civil War Trails site has a sponsor or should have a sponsor. That sponsorship, like one of your forthcoming guests, allows us to edit that sign when we hear back from people. It allows us to update that sign content, allows us to put up all those directional signs, allows us to print the brochures, to ship the brochures to people. And occasionally we do lose sign sponsors, especially in really rural areas. So we always have a handful of sites that need an annual sustaining sponsor. And right now, it currently costs $200 to sponsor a Civil War Trails site.
Oh my gosh. That's reasonable.
So not a ton laughers. Of money. Come on, laughers, step up. Yeah. So we always have a handful. Like, I can think of four or five right now that just lost their sponsors because those communities have got other priorities to fund right now. It's just where we are. But we also, since we're a nonprofit organization and since things are more expensive now than they've ever been, one of the things we are actively doing is soliciting donations for people to help with general operating expenses. Now, this tends not be like the sexy sell. Like, I can sponsor a sign or I could give to general operating expenses, but we need we need new boots. We need new clothes. We need new tools. We need to put gas in the van. We need paint, nuts, bolts. I mean, I just broke another drill last week. And these are all things that people who donate to us help us afford to do. So if you appreciate what you're hearing about Civil War trails and you really want to support us, any donation that you make is or can be considered tax deductible depending on how you file. We have some people who are very generous and they just write a check a year. We have other people who have used our monthly PayPal system where you can put in like $5 and just click monthly, which adds up. I mean, $5 a month at the end of the year allows us to buy a new panel, like a replacement panel for one of the signs. There's multiple ways, but please reach out to me on our website, again, civilwartrails.org, if you're interested in donating. If there's a specific story that motivates you, if there's something you want to give, we would obviously be happy to work with you. And we could use those now more than ever.
Mm. You know, that's true. Operating expenses are not sexy, but the moments that you create for people that take the time to travel to these Civil War sites and then spend time getting some good beer and some good barbecue and talk about what they just saw and have some reflection and deep discussion and think about what would they do, that's what's sexy. That's the magical moment right there. So that's, if you don't have the boots and you don't have all these other things, then that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I will say, speaking of not sexy, our last trip in Pennsylvania, in 4 days, we did 33 signs plus a board meeting. And on one day, it rained so hard that our pop-up tent that we used to help, you know, prevent us from getting soaked on a job site as we're installing a sign, our pop-up tent not only broke, but then snapped and then fell into two. And then when Chris climbed back into the van, he had a big hole through his boot, so his feet were wet. You know, and that's $600 that I got to find. Mm. And the choice is like, okay, I could take an annual sponsorship fee, but if that sign breaks, then I will have taken the money from that. Mm-hmm. So these general operating expenses go a long way. And I promise you, they don't always buy beer or barbecue, but we do need boots and tools too. So
yes, absolutely. And to, you know, have some rejuvenation time with a barbecue and the beer. So you can go to the next one and do whatever you do there. You have to dig, I'm sure, right? What's the average time? Let's say you did 33. You go to a new site, you're putting a new sign in, you're popping up the tent, you're doing all the things that you do. What's the average length of time to put in and install a new site?
If everything's agreeing with us and we didn't hit a utility line or bedrock or old asphalt or anything else, it usually takes us about an hour and a half to install a sign. Okay. So on this run in Pennsylvania, we did these 33 signs, and it was Chris and I in the van and Jason, who's a part-time contractor for us, in his truck. And we crisscrossed each other through three states. So we would drive past him and take a peek out the window to make sure he was doing okay. And he'd drive past us and stop and give us a piece. And then that's how we do it. And we usually get to the hotel at like 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night, looking like Pigpen from Charlie Brown, because we're in overalls and we're caked with mud and full of paint. And there was on the last trip, we ended up booking into this really nice hotel for our board meeting the next day. And we walked into the lobby, which was like marble and these people sitting around in really nice suits and dresses at this real posh bar. And we came in and like our welly boots were squeaking on the marble and we were leaving footprints on the whole thing. And that's how we get it done.
Excellent. Came in like a storm, you two.
It is, sometimes Chris and I look at each other and we just say, we have a weird job.
You do. But what a great and exciting job, I think. So unusual. I haven't ever met anybody that does anything like this till I met you, which I'm thankful for. And this wealth of information is so amazing. I want to ask you, too, in Front Royal, when people go and they're planning to explore those sites in that area, what are some of the must-see sites or experiences they shouldn't miss along the Civil War Trails route?
Well, if you're a Gettysburg nerd, in the northwestern corner of the county is the site for the Battle of Manassas Gap. So if you're an uber Civil War nerd, or if you're traveling with somebody who's an uber Civil War nerd, you should give them bragging rights by taking them to the battlefield, or rather what looks like an interstate, but is actually a battlefield called Manassas Gap. And that is the Battle of Wapping Heights or Manassas Gap. And that's the last battle of the Gettysburg campaign. So highly recommend that. It is just a sign in a parking lot. But for you Uber history nerds, or for those of you who have a dad or a son or a brother who's really interested in it, that is one of the bragging rights sites to go to. You know, the bridges site on the end of North Royal Street where Taylor will receive his first Medal of Honor is interesting as well. Because you're kind of standing there with your back to the river, and I think all of a sudden it sort of dawns on you like this weird situation you all are in. Mm-hmm. But the one place I would not miss, and the one place I would also start your experience, is the Visitor Center downtown. Mm-hmm. There's a Civil War Trail sign at the Visitor Center that gives you a map of all of these sites, so you kind of can figure out, do I want to walk to some of them? Do I want to drive to some of them? It gives you some, you know, just tidbits. But yes, the one thing you should not miss when you go to Front Royal is the Visitor Center. I know that sounds weird, but it's the best place to get the orientation for the different battles. It's the best place to get an idea of how you're going to sort of plan your day. And for the Uber Civil War nerd, that is the best way to figure out which sites you want to hit. So start at the Visitor Center. Make sure you don't miss that one.
That's awesome. And how perfect, because that will be the next episode that they will see in this series. And if they start there, then they can come back and see you. It depends, you know, the pod
perfect.
World. Yes. Lastly, as we wrap up here, how best can the Laughers stay updated with the Civil War's trail site on social media or otherwise?
So we are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Well, Facebook, Instagram, and now X.
Yes.
You know, history of people and technology. Can find us on all three of those platforms at Civil War Trails. We post frequently, but keep in mind, it's just Chris and I. So if we're riding around covered in mud and overalls, we might not be posting a lot. But we tend to post there about when the new sites are coming out. We also tend to post when we've hit a really good beer or some really great barbecue. We'll also post some tips. So as we experience different things, we'll make some tips and tricks. So for example, one of our favorite eats in the Shenandoah Valley only takes cash. And we didn't realize that until we had got there. So we want to make sure you don't have the same mistake. So yes, you can keep up with us on the socials at Civil War Trails. You can also write into our website if you, again, are an educator and need any information or want to request a brochure. So you can find us there. And you could just set up a Google alert for Civil War Trails, because we're always posting when the new signs are coming out. We got three that we're announcing this week.
Love it. I'm so excited. That's exciting. Well, thank you so much, Drew. This has been super fun chatting with you about all things Civil War Trails. It's this amazing work that you guys do. Thank you again for coming on the show.
Dawn, thank you so much for having me. It's been a ton of fun.
It has been a ton of fun. I'm so excited. Now I have more reasons to go back to Front Royal, so thank you very much. Laughers, to learn more about Civil War sites, please visit their website at civilwartrails.org. You can take a deeper dive into the Civil War sites in the six states and more. And we want to thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Virginia is for Laughers. We have enjoyed our time with you, and we hope that you have too. And if you have, please like and share this video with just about every friend you know, and help us grow this channel so we can bring more awareness to people about how they can get the best out of their Shenandoah Valley experience. Also, don't forget that discount on Prepopsterous using promo code LAUGH15 when you visit prepopsterous.com. That way you can munch on it when you join me on next week's episode. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, Laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye.